You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast with Mike and Mike. Howdy, sir. How are you?
Howdy.
You ready for some high culture?
High culture, yeah. A little bit of English melodrama.
Exactly. Coming to you from the small screen to the big screen to the podcast room, it's talking all about Downton Abbey, the movie. Or should it be the motion picture, if you want to talk about it?
I think they just call it Downton Abbey.
Okay.
Well. I don't think they – it's not like, you know, it's not like Star Trek, the motion picture.
It's
like.
Oh,
you know, Star Trek is another show that, you know, went from the tiny tube to the big screen and with some mixed success. So well,
exactly. You know, at least this didn't have V'ger in it because that would have been interesting.
Yes. Yes. Downton Abbey meets V'ger would have been a totally different movie.
Oh, that would have definitely blown a couple people's minds out to watch the house take off into the atmosphere and go up against this giant cloud in space. That could have been interesting. Kirk unit. No. All right. We're getting off track. But hi, everybody. It's going to be one of those episodes. I can tell it already.
Well, it's you know, we're crazy because, like, you know, I mean, I know that, you know, we've taken kind of some of the numbering off of our shows so that people might not be aware that this is episode 491.
We've done this for quite some time, folks.
We are now... like less than 10 episodes away from 500.
It's a milestone. As we like to tell people when we do our podcasting, you know, seminars and or classes and such, you know, we don't, you know, most podcasts never make it past the 10th episode. Us, we're too stubborn to stop. Yeah. And we're coming up on 500, folks.
There are so many people out there, including us, that cannot believe that we made it past 10 episodes.
No, I am. I was listening to episode 11 of the podcast the other day, and my God, I can't believe we made it out of the 20s. That's true.
It's crazy. It's been a strange trip. And yeah, I think in the next few episodes, you might see us reminiscing a little bit about the past 9+ years. So forgive us if we get a little bit nostalgic.
We'll get misty on you.
But and believe me, you know, we are going to make sure that with episode 500 comes, we definitely will make a mark. So stay tuned for more information on that.
Oh, yeah. We got some lot of stuff planned for it. Some really cool stuff that we have never done before. So this should be really interesting to see how it goes. It should be a lot of fun. You know, we definitely would love to hear from you guys, though. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com. What would you guys like to see for episode 500?
I think that'd be pretty cool. Earth Station 1 presents Dancing with the Podcasters.
Oh, God, that just scares the hell out of me. I think I just vomited my lunch into my throat there. Oh, wow. You know, I am the two left-footed Faber, so it's okay. It would be interesting, definitely, but, you know, wow. We had to go there and everything.
So tell us, people, do you want us to dance? Do you want us not to dance? Like, you got to tell us what you want and what you don't want. Because, yeah, don't just tell us what you want. Tell us what you don't want.
Tell us what you want. Tell us what you really, really want.
And what you really, really don't.
Exactly. So, you know, we could do, you know, episode 500 ESO karaoke.
Yes, we could. That might be slightly less embarrassing or more embarrassing than dancing.
Yeah, exactly. Depends, you know, your take on it and everything.
Depends on how much pie we have.
Well, if there's pie in it, I could do it all night. It'd be great. I'll have to tell you one time about when I became the karaoke king of Ocean City, Maryland. That's for a lot of pie. I'll tell you that one. Just, you know, it was a lot of fun. And just say, you know, good old Rocky Top, Tennessee.
Wow.
Yeah, but we're not going to go there because, you know, we don't want to scare anyone else away. So let's get started with the show this week. I got a great topic for you, Mike. Speaking of anniversaries and such, you know, we're working up our way up 500. This past Saturday night, Do you know it was the 80th anniversary of Batman?
Yes, it was Batman Day.
Exactly.
This year has all been about celebrating the 80th year of The Dark Knight.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So I thought it'd be kind of fun. You know, we've done Batman episodes in the past.
Oh, yeah.
And we've done a few different ones. But I thought it would be kind of fun, just you and I just chatting back and forth. You know, what Batman, when did you discover him in your life? And, you know, different eras of Batman and stuff. Because I know you're a huge Batman fan as it is.
Batman's my guy. Batman and Spider-Man are my two guys. And I have to say that I probably, I don't know if this is true for you, but I probably discovered them through television first before comics. It was an easy 1-2 punch because comics were much more available then. But between having the 60 series in syndication and the animated series, especially not like, you know, the later animated series, but we're talking about the early Batman animated series, as well as Super Friends.
Mm-hmm.
I probably saw Batman on television first. I know I fell in love with the 60s show in syndication. Just love the colors, love the action, loved Batman and Robin, the villains, just ate that stuff up. And I don't remember my first episode. I don't remember my first Batman comic. To me, he's always been there, man.
Well, of course. It's the same way with me because, you know, I grew up with the Batman cartoons that they used to have because they used to have Batman and Robin. They used to have Aquaman, Superman, and then every once in a while they would put in The Flash or Green Lantern or a couple of other DC heroes. And it was always great to see. And then Super Friends with Wendy and Marvin. It was just, you know, that was how I discovered Batman. But then also picking my parents or grandmother used to, when she got me comics, every once in a while pick up an issue of Brave and the Bold or Detective Comics or something like that. So it was kind of interesting to see.
I have plenty of early issues of Batman and Detective Comics and Batman Family.
Oh, yeah.
But I think my favorite title was Brave and the Bold. I loved Brave and the Bold. I loved the idea of Batman and being in it, of course, and then having a guest hero just being introduced to a new DC hero every month or whenever it came out. Like back then, I had no idea. They just were all there, right? And I used to pick it. We used to pick up comics at yard sales, and you just pick up comics and you picked them up. They had the 3-packs in the department stores, and you just picked up comics wherever you could, and mm-hmm. you had no idea like what was new and what wasn't. It just was this like hodgepodge of stuff, and as much as Neil Adams gets a lot of praise and credit, and like, rightly so, for really making an impact on the Batman character in the comics, my Batman is done by Jim Aparo.
Oh, yeah, of course. Especially if you were a total, like you said, total Brave and the Bold head.
Oh,
you
know, yeah.
Aparo did so many issues, and, you know, it's like I always expected, for me, it was Batman, Brave and the Bold, but it was also Justice League and Batman and Superman together. And then, you know, the era I grew up in also had the Super Sons. I don't know if you ever remembered those from World's Finest.
No, I don't really recall them per se. I do remember World's Finest, but I don't remember like any of the Super Sons. But I do remember there was a lot of like, you know, legacy and characters introduced, and they would, you know, before they really had a multiverse defined as a multiverse, they just had like, they were just doing crazy stuff. And they had like, you know, like the Batman and the Brave and the Bold was not doing anything like the Batman in Detective or the Batman in the Batman book. Like they were all three separate books telling three separate stories, and they didn't match up at all.
Well, I'm sure for you growing up, Batman was already the mature Dark Knight detective again. He wasn't the goofy 1960s character. you know, by that point.
No, I mean, I'd seen some of those back issues, but right. Yeah, I didn't. Yeah, that was, I don't have, even still to this day in my collection, I don't have very many of those in my collection. My collection pretty much starts with the early Neil Adams stuff and then grows from there.
Oh, sure. No, it totally makes sense. It's just interesting that, you know, I'm not that much older than you. We're fairly close in age, but, you know, different how we read it differently because, you know, the different comics and stuff, it was interesting. And, you know, I always loved, you know, I always thought it was weird, like in Justice League, Superman and Batman were not in the same issues a lot of the times together. They traded them off. But then you also had like you said, the Brave and the Bold. I remember when they did the Super Friends comic, I was real excited. And
they had one that was Treasury Edition. You remember that? The Treasury Edition Super Friends?
Mm-hmm, of course.
Well, the Treasury Editions were amazing. The ones that they had, Batman have a few. And then by contrast, then you had these like little tiny digests. Like the Secret Origin digests and the little tiny digests of pocket comics that were, you know, reprints. Obviously, they were all reprints. We didn't know that at the time, though, because we just had no, you know, there was no internet to tell you like when these things were done or how, what have you. It was just, you know, it was just, like I said, everything was just coming at me at once. But what would you say? What did you like best about either Batman or his cast of characters around that time? Like what attracted to you? What did you keep reading more about Batman?
Well, for me, it wasn't even the reading. It was watching the Adam West TV show. And I loved how colorful his bad guys were. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were funny in some ways and they weren't scary in anything. But then there was the one episode of Batman that I have not ever seen the second part of. And because it's when I was a kid, it just scared the crap out of me is when Robin was getting eaten by the giant clam.
I remember that.
And it was just like, as a kid. And for some reason, I was never able to see the second part of that episode. And I still haven't seen it, in all honesty. I don't know how he got out of it.
I can loan you my Blu-ray.
Okay, that
it's okay. He makes it out.
Oh, I'm sure he does. He doesn't become clam chowder. It's okay.
I was always into the detective stuff, whether it was Encyclopedia Brown or reading like Sherlock Holmes stuff back in the day, or like I just loved reading those mysteries. Ellery Queen mystery magazines, sure. And mystery stories, the ones where like they would not tell you how the murder was done and you'd have to guess it and then flip to the end and see if you were right, that kind of thing. And I just love that stuff. And I think for me, Batman, as colorful as he is, as amazing, like as dark as he is, he was for me, first and foremost, a detective. He was the smartest guy in the room. He was the guy that you went to if you needed to figure out what the heck was going on. I really was engaged by that Batman. Mm-hmm. The things changed dramatically in the 80s, but
Times Batman became a jerk in a lot of ways.
Brooding. Yeah. I mean, and I think we have Frank Miller to thank for a lot of that.
Oh yeah. I could see that, but they were headed towards that, but he still wasn't, always brooding. There were lighter moments, especially as Bruce Wayne and such. So it was interesting to see.
I mean, I have the issue where it's the last Brave and the Bold because he's like, I don't want to team up with anybody. I have the issue where there was like a 1 year where he broke off from the Justice League. World's Finest was canceled because he didn't want to work with Superman anymore. Batman and the Outsiders, he left that because that just became the Outsiders. Like he was really becoming more and more isolated.
Yeah, very much so. They were making him the loner type character, and because they canceled Brave and the Bold to start Outsiders. And that's when they had him quit the Justice League to be with the new team.
His own team.
Exactly.
But then he canceled, and then he quit that team.
Exactly. And so, but that's also when they got into the deluxe versions. And, you know, they had the newsprint version and then the deluxe versions, because Outsiders was very popular at that time. Mm-hmm. And so it was cool. And then that was also.
Then he joined Justice League International.
For a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, he was like, any time a book needed a bump, they would put Batman in it.
Oh, exactly. And that's also when they brought in, like, you know, the ha-ha Justice League, and he took out Guy Gardner with one punch.
One punch.
Exactly. And I loved it. And, you know, Black Canary just kept on laughing and going, one punch, one punch. And the other, and a couple of the other Justice League. And I missed it. I missed it. It was just classic. And where there was, you know, they tried to lighten Batman up a little bit in that series, but they just couldn't. And that also was the whole time with the whole thing with Tim Drake and, you know, the Robin that wasn't popular, and, you know, they killed him off. And, you know, it was just
Jason Todd would go stuff. Yeah. The whole, like, you know, that would lead into the voting to his death, which, you know, is history now, but back then it was a big thing. And, you know, I mean, and right there, Jim Aparo was all part of that. I mean, he was doing the artwork on that. And, man, it's just like, whenever I think of Batman, he's the one I think of. It's his art style. And I've seen a lot of great, that's not to diminish anybody who's done art on a Bat book, because there's been some amazing artists over the years. And Batman and Detective Comics are still two books that I get every month.
Like, really?
No matter, or every 2 weeks now they come out. So I am now both of them are kind of, I've backstacked them a little bit because I haven't been able to catch up. So I'm a few issues behind, but since, you know, back in the 80s, 70s, whatever, from that day to now, there are not very many holes in my collection. There are a few because, you know, college years.
Details.
Exactly. But, you know, pretty much I would, you know, over the years, if it had Batman in it, it, you know, I got it. So my, I would say probably a good 25 to maybe even 30% of all my comics is Batman centric.
Oh, I could totally understand that. Probably say about, maybe 25% of mine have Batman, something to do with Batman, and either Justice League, because I had a full run of the original series of Justice League from like number 15 all the way to the end. And, you know, I also had tons of Brave and the Bold and, you know, stuff like that. And it was just awesome and everything. Hell, Batman even appeared in Neil Gaiman's Sandman at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was pretty awesome to see. So
he's, you know, I mean, Superman is the iconic, like, DC hero, right? I mean, Superman is Superman. And I don't, you know, I've gone through phases where I didn't really care about Superman. I've gone through phases where I've loved what they were doing with Superman. So, you know, I don't have anything against Superman or any other DC hero for that matter.
Right.
But man, Batman's my guy. And, you know, most of the time, I think they've done him well. Some of the storylines, of course, are better than others. There's some classic ones in there. I just think that, you know, especially when I compare him to Spider-Man, like Spider-Man is another hero that I got Amazing Spider-Man and whatever his other book was of his, you know, whether it was Spider-Man or Web of Spider-Man or Peter Parker, Spectacular Spider-Man, whatever. I would get those through the course of, you know, my life as well. And so, but to be honest with you, Spider-Man had some terrible runs that I suffered through. And even Batman at his lowest run was never as bad as some of those Spider-Man runs.
Well, come on. Everyone needs a clone saga in their life every once in a while.
No, they don't. And Spider-Man's had multiple clone sagas. That's the one thing that's like a scab they just won't like let go. Won't leave alone. It's awful. But anyway, not to diminish that. That's a different thing. But I can safely say that I've enjoyed at least 40 some years of Batman. So about half of the time that he's been in print, I have enjoyed those. And I don't have, you know, I have no aspirations that I'll ever have every issue. Some of them are way more than I can afford. I have a lot of the reprints. I don't, you know, I'd have to really sit down and think if I, to do the math and see if I've got every issue from the beginning to the end and in some form. But I probably, if I don't, I have very few holes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's not bad though. So, you know, a lot of people, you know, collect a little bit here, a little here and such. And truthfully, I think Batman is stronger now than he's ever been. In some ways.
Well, the two series that they've got going on, they've had two great writers on Batman over the last, I'd say, 5 years or so. Scott Snyder being one, who I thought did some amazing stuff recently with Batman and is still working on Batman to an extent. I think he's got his own Bat book that, if it's not out already, it's coming out very soon. And then Tom King has been writing the Batman book, and he's been doing an exceptional job for that. So good stuff. And I should point out too, that recently I made the decision. I went into the plunge and got the DC Universe app.
Really?
So a lot of those cartoons that you were talking about are all available on the DCU app. So if you want to see those early Aquaman, Batman, Flash, Green Lantern, Super Friends stuff, they're all there. Like there's a ton of material there. And they also have the newer stuff. I spent Batman Day Saturday night watching the first thing I watched on the Batman on the DC Universe app was, which is hooked up to my TV, so I can watch it on my TV. The first thing I watched was the new version, the new feature of Hush.
Really?
Yep. So, and that just came out a little while ago. So that's, you know, all the DC animated movies that they've made over the years, most of those are available. And also, if you're a big fan of Batman the Animated Series, and who isn't, as well as Batman Beyond, all of those are there too.
Exactly. And that's the way it should be. It's awesome. And now you have a new version of Bruce Wayne on Titans on top
of it. Yes, which I haven't started watching Titans or any of that yet, or Doom Patrol or anything, but I'll get there. And I'm looking forward to it. So, yeah, Batman is everywhere, man.
He is everywhere. Batman is even in your cereal. It's true. There is Batman cereal. So. And there's Batman Underoos, so it's even he's underneath
it. Is there still Batman cereal? There was, I remember, when the movie came out, but I don't know if they still make it.
I'm sure somewhere in the world you could find Batman cereal.
I'm sure you can.
I can go onto eBay right now.
I don't recommend you eat those, though. There's probably the expiration date is probably well past its date.
It's cereal. How bad could it get? Oh, well, okay.
Like, it was never good to begin with.
Good point. Before we keep on rolling and everything, we just wanted to wish everyone a very happy Batman Day. It was really great to see how much love he was getting. And it was awesome. For Superman's 75th anniversary, DC had done a great animation for him. For this year, they did a great animation for Batman's 80th, showing what he looked like year by year and how he changed and evolved. And it was just screenshots of, you know, different artists drew him that year. And it was great to see.
Yeah, my favorite. I mean, you can say what you want about, you know. Yeah, it's a corporate holiday, whatever, and it's contrived.
Aren't they
this,
all?
This Batman Day, but you know what? Even if you don't like buy anything or you know do anything crazy, the thing that's awesome, my favorite thing about Batman Day is that all like artists around the world like post their Batman pictures, and so you have these beautiful. Illustrations of Batman in various forms from Mark Brooks to Mike Mignola to Art Adams to Francesco Francavilla to our good friend Robert Jimenez. Like everybody is putting Batman stuff out there and it's just awesome. Like it's just like he is one of my favorite characters to see because there's so many different incarnations of him and they all work in my opinion. They all work.
Of course they do, because it's each one has their own interpretation of what the bat looks like,
yep.
Which is really awesome. We'd love to hear from you guys at home, though. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com. Let us know how Batman's affected your life. Do you have Batman tattoos? Do you have your room look like the Batcave? You know, we definitely would love to hear from you. And send us pictures, too. We definitely always love pictures. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment with the Geek Seat.
Hey, Adam Thomas.
Yes, Thomas Mariani?
You know how there are podcasts about bad movies?
Yeah.
And also podcasts about good movies?
Yeah.
Well, what if a podcast could cover both?
What?
Listen to Double Edge Double Bill, where a random selected yin and yang of a double feature is picked and then picked apart.
Now, who came up with this wacky idea?
Adam, we did. That's our show.
I'm learning something new every day.
Listen to us on the ESO Network and wherever podcasts are available.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Earth Station 1. Now it is the Geek Seat segment, and we are here with our newest victim of the Geek Seat. Let's welcome Andy Hartley to the show. Welcome, sir.
Hello.
Howdy. Welcome to the station.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. Absolutely. For those people who may not be familiar with you, tell us a little bit about yourself.
As far as for what this is audience is concerned, some of you may know me. I'm on the staff of the Brit track at Dragon Con. I've been doing that for 4 years, 5 years, somewhere in that line. I am mostly I guess that's it for this kind of stuff. In the real world, I do finance, which is not nearly as exciting. But I'm willing to talk about it if you'd like, though I have to charge a fee.
Well, you know there are finance geeks out there, so it's okay.
Oh, sadly enough, I am not a finance geek. That's just what I do.
Yeah, I believe there are many British jokes about chartered accountants.
So. Oh, God, yes.
Well, tell us, do you consider yourself an Anglophile?
Oh, absolutely. My child is named Elizabeth, halfway after Elizabeth Tudor and halfway after Elizabeth Bennet.
So, okay. Solid, man.
We've been fighting for years. My wife and I finally got a Jane Austen panel at Brit Track, so we were pretty psyched about that.
Gotcha. And now, was this something that happened at an early age? Was there a reason for it, do you think? I mean, had you been there?
Not until college. Okay. I just always, my mom was a bit of an Anglophile, just sort of grew up that way. Just over time, I've always been a giant history geek.
Gotcha.
And just wound up loving all things British.
I'm with you to an extent. I mean, for me personally, it's more about the British pop culture than it is the, you know, history of it. I mean, obviously, I like a lot of the history, but it's more I like the more romantic fictional history, like Robin Hood and Ivanhoe and stuff like that, and King Arthur and all that kind of stuff. But I cannot, you know, I've tried several times. I cannot keep the lineage of kings and queens straight to save my life. Now, is that something that you could do? I mean, if you had to, could you name like everybody in succession?
I can't go much further back than Canute, but yeah, from there on.
Wow, that's solid, man. That's
fairly.
And so, what would you think? What would you say are some of your favorite British culture things that you just love, like of literature or pop culture?
I love the Regency period, like the Austen stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm contractually obligated to say Doctor Who.
As aren't we all.
Hey, every time it's mentioned, you get paid $5. Come on.
Well, I need to tell Kara that. I have a hard time nailing down one. It really depends on the day. Mm-hmm. There'll be some days where I'm really into British pop culture. There are other days when I'm just seriously geeking out on some random, like, medieval minor nobleman. I'm all over the map.
For me, it's that wonderful period of, I guess it was like the late 18th century, where you sort of have like Sherlock Holmes and Jack the Ripper and all this, like H.G. Wells, all this stuff kind of coming out of that period. It's just, to me, like just such a fertile period of creativity and imagination, and not all of it is pleasant. Not all of it is pleasant.
Well, no, but yeah, the empire at its height, and you have just great, just a cultural intellectual ferment going on, and there's something for everybody in that period. It's a lot of fun.
So, well, I mean, we'll talk about that now a little bit later, but obviously that's something, that's why you're initially here on the podcast. So that's great. We're glad to have your perspective on the movie and more. Mike, I think he's ready for the hard questions.
The hard questions.
Yeah. Come on
here. You were asking him some pretty tough ones there, Mr. Gordon. So.
But that's nothing. I mean, now he's strapped in.
Yeah, I know. You secretly were winding the duct tape and the bungee cord and everything around his seat, and he wasn't even realizing it. You're just having to talk about Anglophile stuff. It's pretty awesome.
Well, you know, it's not quite the barber's chair in Sweeney Todd, but it's pretty lethal.
Oh, yeah, exactly. People have scars to this day, and they, for people who did it 9 years ago, you know, it's pretty amazing. So, Andy, are you ready for your first question in the geek seat?
Ready as I'm going to be.
Okay. I don't know. He sounds too happy, Mike. What is this with these happy people in the geek seat? You know,
they always start out that way.
I remember when they used to start crying as soon as they saw the duct tape. You know,
it's a sign of the times, my friend.
Mm-hmm, yeah, I think we're just getting too old and too mellow in our old age, is what it is. Oh well. All right, Andy. What was your favorite geek out moment?
So my favorite geek out moment, this goes back to the history geek, was when I was politely asked to leave Westminster Abbey.
Why?
Because I had been, so I'm there visiting, ran into a retired history teacher who was British, and several times we would get on some topic and sort of cackle, and the guards would shush us. And we got to the tomb that Elizabeth I shares with Bloody Mary.
Oh, cool.
Which, in case you don't know, Mary, who is Elizabeth's older half-sister, tried to have Elizabeth executed a lot. And the two of them absolutely hated each other. And we just started cackling, and I was escorted out of the building.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that is awesome.
Yeah. Never got kicked out of a bar when I was backpacking through Europe, but I got kicked out of a church with a 70-year-old woman.
Wow.
No end of hell over that.
What was your most disappointing geek out moment?
So this was another time when I'm in Europe. We're in Italy. My girlfriend and I get on the train to Naples to go to Pompeii. Mm-hmm. We got on a local train. It stopped about every half kilometer or so. And we finally made it to Pompeii 5 minutes after the gates closed.
Oh.
She cried the whole way back to Rome. It was not a happy day. we saw Pompeii. We just couldn't go in Pompeii. So that was kind of disappointing.
No, totally understand that. But it's interesting that you ran into that. Did they ever find out why it took so long?
Oh, yeah. We just, when we had asked for the train, there was an express train and a local, which was basically for commuters and such.
Right.
And the porter guy sent us to the local, not the express.
Oh.
And so it really did. It stopped like every little village, and like school kids would get on and ride it to school like a school bus.
Wow.
And so it took 9 or 10 hours to, instead of like 90 minutes.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Oh, I am so, so sorry. Not to quote David Tennant or anything, but
yes.
I am so, so sorry.
It happens. It's been 20 years. I'm over it. But
yeah. Are you sure?
Mostly.
Okay. We're here to help.
What geeks you out the most?
Weird historical survivals. Like most of my friends have heard me geek out multiple times. And the fact that a couple of years ago, we actually found a sample of Cleopatra's handwriting.
Whoa.
It just blows my mind. It was in a trash heap in Egypt because nothing rots in Egypt because it's dry.
Right, of course.
In fact, we have like a list and she's annotated it. The handwriting of someone who, you know, died in 30 BC is just freaky to me. And any stuff like that, like just random little personal bits of history that have survived through some weird happenstance.
I'm sure it totally geeked you out seeing that.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I could totally see that. What turns your geek off, though?
When I start talking about that and I see the eyes glaze over,
which
happens a lot.
Nope, you don't.
I'll just start talking and people are like, okay. Yeah, okay. Then I just sort of trail off and get quiet and go sit in a corner.
I'll just sit over here and, you know, I'll look at my hieroglyphics. It's okay.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like, you know, again, that's why I get so excited when I meet someone who we do the high-speed data transfer.
Right.
And find someone else who's like us.
That I understand.
Yeah.
What fiction character would you like to meet the most?
I would love to meet Jack Aubrey from the Patrick O'Brien's novel series, the Aubrey Maturin series. If you saw the Russell Crowe movie, Master and Commander, it's the series that's based on.
Oh, yeah.
I've read all the books like 8 times. It's a great, great series.
I so wish they would make the other books into movies.
I know. They really need to make HMS Surprise.
I know.
I could do a whole, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll stop myself.
Master and Commander was wonderful. It was one of my favorite Russell Crowe movies.
Yes. I know when Billy Boyd came to con a couple of years ago, it made his day. That's what I asked him about.
Oh, really?
Because he was Barrett Bondin. And we talked about that for about 15 minutes. There was behind me.
I'm sure he was happy that you weren't asking him all about The Hobbit.
The Hobbit, yes. That's what my wife asked him about. But
what fictional character would you, let's look at the flip side of that then. What fictional character would you like to meet the least?
Freddy Krueger.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It's freaked me out as a kid. If you're going not like, you know, someone who's actually going to murder me, probably Sherlock Holmes because he's an asshole. Am I allowed to say that?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, I wasn't sure how this was.
We're PG-13 on the show.
Okay, all right. So I'll try not to drop any F-bombs. But
you mean
you're going to get a lot of Doyle heads after you. But you know, other than
Sherlock
that,
Sherlock is fine. Interesting, but I wouldn't want to meet him.
But if you don't drop any F-bombs, you can't say fun and fuzzy and friend. Oh. What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
Fear is the mind killer, the whole litany against fear.
Really?
Yeah. Don't ask me to quote it all because I can never keep it straight and certainly not on the spot. But I've always, ever since I read that book for the first time, dear God knows when, I've always really liked that. I'll sort of reference it here and there a lot in conversation.
That's cool. That is very cool. I like that. What is your ideal geek occupation?
I will give the answer I gave my fourth grade teacher when they asked me what I wanted to be when I grow up, and that is Star Destroyer Captain.
Oh, okay. He wants to work for the Empire. Okay.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, again, if Angela was back in the room, she'd point out that I do test as a Slytherin. She loves pointing that out. But yeah, they have snappy uniforms.
Touche.
Can't argue with that.
No, I'm not going to argue that one at all. That is actually pretty awesome. What geek occupation would you not like to do, though?
Henchman? Just the sort of the mooks in the background, or like Will Ferrell and with Dr. Evil, like, I'm really very badly burned. Sort of stay out of the line of fire as much as possible.
Or the guys who always got beat up by Batman and Robin and everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I don't want to have anything to do with Kerblowy.
No. Okay. I could see that. Definitely could see that. Our judo chop. Chop.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Chiropractor Bill.
What is your, you ready for your final question in the Geek Seat?
I am ready.
What is your ultimate geek fantasy?
I would love to be a companion of the 12th Doctor. That's Peter Capaldi's Doctor.
Okay.
He's my favorite Doctor, and just access to a TARDIS. Again, the history geek thing.
Right.
That would just be awesome.
Well, he was always the one who asked all the history questions and
yeah,
and stuff like that. And, you know, like, so, just suppose, you know, you heard a tune and you played it for Beethoven. That was just awesome with the, and he, da, 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 you know, and it's yes, like, so did Beethoven hear it first or write it first?
First or, yeah.
That was just awesome and everything. I could see that. You just don't want to get on his bad side because, you know.
Well, no, because he's the grumpy doctor, but I kind of like the grumpy old man doctor.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
It's a nice change of pace.
Very much so. That is awesome. So 12th Doctor companion, is that your final answer?
That is my final answer.
Okay, Clara. All right. So, so since you're now the most important girl in the whole wide universe, you've made it through the Geek Seat, Andy. Congratulations.
Yay. Huzzah.
Mr. Mike Gordon, tell the young man what he's won.
You have won a lifetime subscription to the ESO Network, a value easily worth $68.04.
Yes. That is awesome. That is cool.
But by the time you compare, like, you know, convert that to pounds and then, you know, it's station currency. So we know that that decreases very rapidly by the closer you get to Earth. Yeah, I'd spend it now.
In a blink of an eye, it'll be gone just like that.
Well, cool. Very cool. Is there any conventions that you're going to be at? Any events that you want to promote?
No, about the only convention I really go to is Dragon Con, sadly.
Awesome.
So I don't have anything to promote.
Well, that's cool. Hey, Dragon Con 2020, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Right around
it's
the
not,
corner.
It's not we're starting already. You know, people are starting to get rooms. You know, it's never too early.
Oh yeah, the Hunger Games have started. We're starting to work on panels.
Oh wow.
Oh, my wife and I on the drive home from Con, we were talking about panels. So, yeah. It never stops.
That is awesome, though. You know, that's the great thing about Dragon Con. It's a year-long event.
It really is.
Yes, it is.
That is awesome. Andy, thank you so much for joining us, my friend.
Thank you.
Let's take a quick break. And Andy's not going anywhere because we're about to talk about Downton Abbey, the movie. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi everyone, Michelle with the Iconic Rock Talk Show moment, and if you've ever heard this segment at all, I think you know what we're going to be talking about today. Of course, last week we lost Rick Ocasek, co-founder, co-frontman, and songwriter for The Cars at his Manhattan home at the age of 75, and you lose artists from time to time that means something to you, particularly when you get older. It happens more and more frequently, and every now and then there's one that is a complete punch to the gut. And I know for a lot of people, and definitely for me, this was one of those. But getting past the numbness and the shock and the sadness of last week and the overwhelming feeling I've had all week long since then is just one of gratitude. Gratitude that he had a vision and he stuck to that vision, even though it took longer to make it. When they finally did make it, they made it pretty much on his and their own terms. And as a result, we're grateful that they left behind music that just makes us happy even now, 40 years later. And we'll be making people happy forever and ever. I'm grateful that he got to see his Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction, and grateful that I got to see it too. I'm grateful that he found a good family life in his later years and had time to spend with his kids. I'm grateful that he was active and doing what he was passionate about. His last year was pretty much spent doing these gallery showings of his artwork and all the photos from those showings. He's relaxed. He is smiling. He looks happy. He's interacting with fans, and you could tell he was just really enjoying himself. And he was doing what he wanted to do right up until his last day. And I'm grateful for all the wonderful, just amazing tributes and write-ups that have just flooded the internet in the past week. Obviously, I didn't know him, and they don't relate to me, but just reading all these tributes from so many people you wouldn't guess has just been really uplifting. Had no idea it would be like this. And so, in tribute, so long, Rick, and thanks for all the music, and we will try to keep on following your example. Keep on laughing and turning confusion into a virtue. This has been the Iconic Rock Talk Show moment. Catch the my Rock and Roll Hall of Fame ballot predictions for this year at iconicrocktalkshow.wordpress.com, and we'll talk to you again next time.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
No valet, no nanny, even.
It's 1927. We're modern folk.
Blimey.
The King and Queen are coming to Downton.
What?
I want every surface to gleam and sparkle.
A royal luncheon, a parade, and a dinner. I'm going to have to sit down.
How's it all going?
Mary's got it under control.
Hardly. I need your help, Carson.
I'll be there in the morning, my lady. Don't you worry.
Should we really go on with it?
You mean, leave Downton? Downton Abbey's the heart of this community, and you're keeping it beating.
Remember to pray for us.
I'll put in a word.
Your Majesties. Welcome to Downton Abbey.
Will you have enough cliches to get you through the visit?
If not, I'll come to you.
Oh, here we go.
Welcome back. It's time to put on our dinner jackets and prepare for the Queen of England to arrive for dinner. Welcome to Downton Abbey, my friends. Take it away, some Mr. Michael Gordon.
Well, we are coming back to Downton Abbey after 3 years, I believe.
Four.
Because I think it ended in, 2015? Goodness gracious.
Yep.
This is a return, long-awaited return, and we're here to talk all about it. Of course, Andy is still stuck in the geek seat.
You know how it is to get those duct tape off of
me. Could have shaved my legs.
and we've got our box office movie buzz person Ashley is here with us.
Hello, I am really excited. I always enjoy talking about movies with the ESO crew, and I think Downton Abbey might be my favorite TV show of all time. So I am super looking forward to talking about this.
And this coming from someone who just recently finished binging Game of Thrones.
I know. Yeah, that one is in my top three, but there's just something special about Downton Abbey. So I'm looking forward to kind of diving into that and maybe the phenomenon as a whole, you know, why this show has meant so much to so many people.
So, well, I want to get right into it. And that's one thing I want to, because yes, Ashley, even though we've had you on many, many times to talk about movies and such, I don't think we've really ever dived into certainly not this show with you. So let's start with you. What was your experience with the show and what were your expectations going into the movie?
Yeah. So, I was trying to think back to how I discovered the show, and I think a friend of mine had seen it on Netflix and recommended it to me saying like, hey, this is something you might enjoy. So I started watching the first couple episodes and then I think binging most of it on a day when I was homesick from work and just like absolutely fell in love with the show. I watch a lot of British period dramas. That's kind of one of my favorite things, but something about Downton just seemed like extra interesting and special to me. So I started watching it, and one of my favorite things to do Sunday nights on PBS, as I'm sure many fans have fond memories of that, and thought that the show ended on a good note, but was really excited when they announced a movie. I would not complain about more Downton. And so yeah, I was just looking forward to seeing all the characters again. I didn't really have a lot of expectations per se. I just wanted it to be kind of a fun movie that made me feel happy watching it, like I felt when I watched the show. And I had a very nice time. I thought it was nice return to Downton Abbey.
Awesome. Awesome. Andy, what's your experience with the show?
Well, we used to record Masterpiece Theater, so we saw an ad for it, and so we watched it live when it first aired, and just we fell in love with it from the beginning, my wife and I, and watched all the way through, liked how it ended. I'll be frank, I was worried when they announced a movie. I thought I still can't really remember any examples of a TV show that they turned into a movie and it went well. I didn't want them to ruin something that had ended in a good way. So I was very nervous. But my fears were unfounded. I really, really, really enjoyed the movie.
Awesome. Yeah. I want to get into the details of it. Mike, what about you?
Well, we've already in probably about 3 years ago, 4 years ago, we might've done, I think we've done an episode of ESO on Downton Abbey.
At least one, right?
Yeah. I think we might've done one or two. Because we've done, you know, we were huge fans. Judy went into it expecting me fully to hate it. And, you know, oh, it's no spaceships or superheroes or stuff like that. And it's like, I like high culture too. I do watch Doctor Who. Come on, you know. So it was always great, you know, to watch it. And I've watched in the past Upstairs, Downstairs, and, you know, shows like that. And so it wasn't that large of a stretch. And I fell in love with the series right from the very beginning and loved the character mix, loved how they fleshed out the characters downstairs, you know, Bates and, you know, all the different characters. And, you know, it was just awesome. And you just learn to love characters, you learn to hate characters, and then you had the upstairs, and they weren't all one-dimensional, which was really awesome. These characters, all the way across the board, were characters you really cared for and wanted to see what happened next.
And did you have some concerns about the movie?
A little bit. You know, I was like going, oh, what if they Hollywood it? What if they, you know, try to make it something that, you know, is going to be sensational, like a blockbuster type thing. And then I heard Julian Fellowes was involved with writing it and bringing it to life on the big screen. And I was not worried at all. Truthfully, it felt like it was a family reunion. It was like coming home to another episode of Downton Abbey.
Yeah, definitely. And I think more so really, I, like you, I mean, yeah, we've talked about Downton Abbey many times on the show. We've even had, like you said, at least one or two shows devoted to the series. And And yeah, I, like you, grew up with Upstairs Downstairs on PBS. So I was used to that kind of device. I love melodrama. Love it, love it, love it. Soaps. I love soap operas. I love all that kind of stuff. And I like Julian Fellowes a lot. I really liked the movie Gosford Park, which, if anybody hasn't seen that, if they like Downton Abbey, they really should see that, because it's like almost like a prequel in some ways. It's really good. I think the only concern, I had two concerns going into the movie, because, and I want to ask this, the broader question of you guys specifically in a second, but, the way the series ended, you know, everybody seemed to be in a happy place. And if it's going to start up again in any way, it's like, that means some people are not going to be happy. So, and they only have a couple of hours to resolve it, right? They've got a bunch of characters to try to give everybody their 15 minutes or so. And that's a challenge. Can they do that in the span of a couple of hours and still really bring us something that's satisfying as far as a story and a plot, and not just feel like a cash grab? Right. So I thought they did some incredible work with the movie. And I, like I said, I want to get into the details of it. But first, I want to ask you guys, do you think that at the end of the series, were you wanting more? Was there more story to tell? Or did you feel like there was an opening for more stories, and that this was a welcome project? Ashley?
Yeah, so I thought that the ending was really good. I think that's one of the trickiest things with a TV series. If you've had people watching this show for years, how are you going to end it in a really satisfying way that will wrap up all these characters and make people feel like this has been worth an investment of their time? So I thought they did a great job ending the series, and they left me satisfied but wanting a little bit more, which I think is good, rather than some shows which go on for far too long and you're like, why won't this end already? But I think they did leave a few loose threads that they could pick up on later, and I think they did a good job in this movie doing that. One of the things that I appreciated about the movie is that they didn't take a lot of time like reintroducing characters. Like, they just kind of take for granted that the people who have seen this movie are big Downton fans. So they just kind of like drop you right in. So I appreciated that we didn't see like any regressions of character arcs, like just going straight on from season 6. So I enjoyed that. To me, it really felt like this was just a couple of episodes of the TV series run together and watched on a big screen. So I think that format served them well.
It's an interesting point. I went with Michelle to the movie, and Michelle hadn't watched, I mean, she'd seen a couple of scenes here and there, but she hadn't watched the show. But she likes, especially British royalty, dramas and everything. So she was attracted to see the movie. And so she went with me, and I asked her afterwards if she was lost, if it held up on its own. And she said, yeah, for the most part. But as we talked, I mean, definitely, she could have used some sort of guide as to who everybody was, because in the beginning, like you said, they just drop you into it. In fact, she was convinced in the first 15 minutes that Lady Mary and Tom Branson were married. and I can totally see that, because it opens with them having breakfast. And they're just, let's face it, they do kind of have this weird bond, right? Like, it wouldn't have been a surprise to see them get involved at some point, because it did seem almost like they were leading up to that in the show a couple times. So that was, you're right. They did kind of do that. But I think for the most part, they did a pretty good job at juggling everyone. Andy, what about you? What is some of the things that you liked about the movie per se?
Oh, just like you saying, it felt like sort of the best Christmas episode ever. It wasn't so much the movie as just a long episode, which is what I was really hoping they would do. Like I said, they didn't waste a lot of time, you know, introducing the characters, because we've only got about 2 hours. We got a lot to cover. But I thought the series ended well, but I could tell that Julian was getting kind of tired.
Yes.
Like the scripts weren't as sharp as they had been. And it really almost feels like he spent the entire time since the series ended working on the script for this movie, because it's just sparkles. The dialogue is marvelous. Almost every time the Dowager Countess opens her mouth, it's a line that would have been her big line for the season.
Yeah.
they're just marvelous. I mean, we were crying laughing watching it.
Needed to pause after she said anything, because there were many times where whoever talked after her, I didn't.
I'm going to have to watch it again, because I have no idea.
Exactly.
But yeah, just, again, it was almost like the best two episodes of the entire run. It sort of crystallized what they've been doing, and it paid off on expecting, like, okay, the audience has watched all of this before. They're familiar with these characters. We know what's going on. And just, yeah, spend those two more hours with these characters, see what they've been up to, and just enjoy being with the family again.
I think the most brilliant thing that they did, because if this is, you know, if Downton Abbey's coming back, yeah, it's fine that they're coming back. If they're going to do sort of a, you know, back in the day, we used to have reunion movies, like of Gilligan's Island and all that kind of stuff.
How many Brady Bunch ones did we get?
Exactly. So this is like a reunion movie. So it's like, okay, well, if they're going to come back and do something, what is an event big enough to not only justify them coming back and doing, you know, having a reunion movie, but also bringing them to the big screen? What is an event that's big enough? And coming up with the idea that the King and Queen are visiting was perfect. From the opening, where we see the letter, you know, in transit, making its way to Downton Abbey, which I thought was just a really fun way to start the movie, till the very end. I thought they did just a tremendous job at making that. That is an event, and it felt like an event. The whole movie felt like an event because of the King and Queen's involvement. I thought that was really... Now, I've heard they've talked about doing other movies, and I'm like, wow, you've got your work cut out for you, because now you're going to have to come up with something great every time in order to justify it, right?
Yeah. So, well, it's interesting, though, because I could see a couple different movies coming up in the future, because they're right now in 1927, yes. And they're on the brink within 2 years of the Great Depression.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of families lost everything. And it'd be great to see how they handle it, especially with Mary's going to be in charge. So,
well, I don't think that would be a happy movie. Not as happy as this, anyway.
No, not at all. But there's some things that they could turn it into. And I could see really good things about this. And I really enjoyed this. Like we've been saying, this is a really like a 2 hour episode of our favorite show. And it was like great to see the characters, and I'm glad they didn't do the reintroductions. Just the brief little instances, you know, like, oh, Tom, oh, blah, 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 you know, oh, Branson, oh, you know, you need to come back to the house, you know, and it's just like, it was just awesome to see, you know, it was great to see, you know, Mrs. Padmore. It was great to see Daisy. It was great to see all the different characters. And it was just, you didn't need to reintroduce unless you were coming into new. And I'll fully admit it, the theater we went to go see it was only half full. So it was funny because people were talking back to the screen and everything first.
They felt like they were watching TV, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, anytime Maggie Smith said anything, people were like clapping and laughing their ass off. And it was just awesome. When Barrow got, you know, arrested, you know, with all the, at the gay club. And it was just like, and someone yelled out, oh, you're going down, boy. And it was just awesome.
You know, it strikes me now, and I'm glad you mentioned the theater attendance, because yeah, I mean, the theater that we in was had a lot of, full seats, but it was a very small theater. So, I didn't know how well it was doing. And since we don't have, Alex here to talk about the box office, I did look it up. And of course, to everybody's surprise, it won the week, Ed, which was amazing because it had some competition. It had Rambo 4 for one thing, and it had there was something else that came out, right?
The Brad Pitt movie.
Yes, the Brad Pitt space movie, Astro, right? So, which had gotten a lot of hype. So yeah, where's everybody who was used to seeing this on their TV going to come out and support it on the big screen? And the answer was yes, they would. At least for the most part. I mean, it wasn't a huge box office weekend. It was 31 million in the States, and it had been open. It had actually appeared, I think, premiered in Britain like a month ago, almost, or like a few, like quite a number of weeks ago, and in Europe as well. So we were kind of like the last ones to get it in some ways, even though that, our PBS support was probably the one of the things that kept it alive all those years.
True.
But, so let's talk about the transition from, the one thing I've heard from a lot of people is that, yes, it is an episode. And I think that's not a derogatory comment. I think that strikes, that is an indication of how good the quality was of the series, because a lot of the episodes were of film quality, like really great film quality. And by also calling it, another episode, I think it was, yes, it was an episode, but it was like one of those special episodes that you got during sweeps or Christmas, right? Like, exactly. Like this is like, because when the King and Queen come, it's not just your average episode. And I thought that, like I said, I thought that that was a brilliant way to bring everybody in together, certainly to get Carson involved again, and to get, because let's face it, as the series ended and everybody was kind of in a good place, I think one of the things that the series did, and you guys, I want to hear your comments on this, because when the series started, it was very much upstairs, downstairs, like you could see the division between the two, and it really was striking at times. But as we got to know the characters, it became less about commentary on that and more about bringing all these characters together. So in a lot of ways, they felt like more of a family than a division between upstairs and downstairs. And certainly when the show ends, it's like that. But the movie, thanks to the introduction of the King and Queen and their staff, you really see the upstairs, downstairs, and the class system on display here, about how not just the servants, but even the people like the King and Queen themselves are trapped in these locked positions that they can't get out of.
Very true. It's very rigid, very formal. And even, they're used to having the same food no matter where they went.
Right. They're touring all these places, but they bring their own staff. So they're like eating, it's like they're eating at home everywhere where they go.
Exactly.
And, they can't just when they're visiting, they can't just go hang out and do whatever they want. No, they have to have a parade and take part in that and dress up and be around everybody who's just always I'm sure they're used to it. And, but because even the Queen says something like, yeah, we're used to people acting weird around us after that wonderful Mosley.
Oh my God.
That was one of the best scenes in the movie. Oh, hands down. Oh God. Mosley was made such an ass out of himself.
But no, I think you're right. The Princess Mary character really sort of showed the gilded cage situation that they're
in.
That she's just utterly miserable, but can't escape without destroying something she loves.
Right.
Exactly. She stayed for the kids.
Yeah. Well, no, she said she stayed for the crown. She tells her parents at the end that the scandal of her leaving her husband would do so much damage to the institution of the monarchy, and she doesn't want to be the one who does that.
I also felt like, the sort of I think the star of the movie, if you have to point to a character, is Tom Branson.
Oh yeah.
I mean, dude, save, he forced the assassination.
Thrilled.
and then gets the girl. Like,
yes. Like, yeah. And gets the castle back in the family.
Exactly. I'm like, damn, Tom. Like, you go. You know, I will say, I admit, I did think the assassination storyline was a little too.
Yeah,
that was a little too much. Because, you know, for Andy, back me up on this, on history buffs, you know the king's not going to die here.
Yes. Yeah. Like, is it 1936? We're good.
Exactly. We're not. It just seemed like, it just didn't seem very Downton Abbey-ish. It's like, oh, we're bringing it on the big screen, so we better have like a action sequence. Like, it's funny, when we were leaving the theater, there were these two older ladies. God, and I'm an older man now. But anyway, there's these two older ladies that we were following outside, and like, but one said to the other, like, it's so nice to go to a movie and not see all that gunplay. And Michelle pointed out, like, there's a gun in this movie. But in Downton Abbey fashion, they like take the gun away and it never, you know, yep. never gets fired. So,
yeah.
I did think that was a bit, it didn't need to be there. I mean, Tom had enough to do without like saving the king's life like that.
Yeah.
But I also, I want to hear from you guys as far as great character moments, because we've already mentioned Mosley, we've mentioned Tom. Anybody else that you want to point out as far as having great character moments in this movie?
I love Anna and Bates. They, you know, concocted the whole thing to get the staff back in away from the crew from the Buckingham Palace. And basically, they, you know, figured out the way to get the chef out and to concoct the whole thing that the head butler of the back door or back steps or whatever he was called, had to go back to London. And it was brilliant. It was truly brilliant.
Well, let's face it. That was more Anna than it was. Like, Mr. Bates just kind of limped around the whole movie. Like, he didn't really do a lot.
Yeah, he didn't do a whole lot in the movie.
No. But that's all right.
But Anna was great.
And during the course of the series, they did a lot. They had a lot of drama.
They've had more than their share of problems.
Exactly. They could just take a breather during the movie.
Yeah. If anyone deserves a happy ending, it's them.
Yeah, the one hope going into the movie is, oh, for the love of God, don't let either of them get arrested.
Yes.
I was thinking the same thing. It was like, oh, please, not again.
Please, not them.
Yes, if the king did get shot, somehow Bates would be be arrested for it.
You know?
Yeah. I was like going, man, the guy looked a little bit too much like Bates, you know? Yeah.
So not only does Anna, like, you know, arrange this whole thing with so that the Downton crew can have their moment with so basically that Mosley can embarrass everybody. But you know, she actually catches like a thief and saves is it Edith's dress? Yeah, right.
Edith's
dress.
Yes.
Yeah. Lady Edith. Yep. So I mean, yeah, she does double duty there. She does a pretty good job. So good call, Mike. Andy, what about you?
Carson, I just sort of giggled to myself every time he was on scene. He was so happy when Mary came to him and he's trying to restrain himself. And I get to go back.
It was interesting though with Carson, the whole thing at the end of the series, he had to retire because he had too much of the shakes and he was ill. And they didn't touch on that at all. In this movie.
No, you're right. And I do know, I remember, of course, you know, Carson and what is her name? They got married, right?
Mrs. Hughes.
Mrs. Hughes.
Right? Got married.
Elsie.
But I don't recall them, like, she's calling him Charlie in the movie. And I'm going, who's Charlie?
Yeah.
Like, I don't remember that in the show at all. I don't know if that was a new thing for the movie.
No, it was mentioned. There was a plot line at one point where he had been a vaudeville performer.
His old
partner showed up and says about Charlie, and they're all like, Charlie? And he's just like, shut up. But yeah, I'd completely forgotten about it until she mentioned it. It was like, oh yeah, it's his name.
Yeah, she kept calling him Charlie, and I was like, oh, that's cute, but that doesn't fit his character to me at all.
No.
Here's the other thing about that too, and it's kind of the machinations of the script. It's like they wanted to have obviously those scenes with Thomas, right? Mm-hmm. And those really intense, impactful scenes, but they had to figure out a way to get Thomas out of the castle, right? So even though Thomas as a character has grown leaps and bounds, probably more than anybody else on the show, character-wise, right? Because he's an absolute like jackhole. Like when that show starts.
Oh, for the first three seasons, yeah. All the way through, you know, once O'Brien left, he was the head jackal, you know?
Yeah. That was another thing that Michelle didn't get from the movie. Cause she's just like, oh, he kind of got the shaft. And I'm like, yeah, but that dude's got history. nobody in the audience is feeling sorry for Thomas, at all. So when he slams that door, you're kind of like, yeah, okay, Thomas, whatever. But they did pay
attention to the detail because he still had his glove on from where he got shot in World War I.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Back in season two.
Exactly.
And you know, of course, the scene where, you know, it does take a bit of a turn and you know, he gets arrested in that, I don't know, it's not a speakeasy, but that underground, you know, gay establishment. And it's like, yeah, I mean, that's one of those scenes. It's like, even though it takes place almost 100 years ago, it feels like we haven't progressed that much.
Nope.
You know, I think at one point, you know, he's like, do you ever think it's going to be any different for us? You know? And he's like, well, we learned how to fly. So that's one thing. And I'm like, here it is. Like, yeah, I mean, this takes place in 1927, which is about what, 90 some years now, right? Almost
88 years ago.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's like, I mean, that's amazing. Like, you know, that scene, you know, I'm not saying it could have been done now, but it's like some of that stuff is a lot of that stuff is still going on.
Oh yeah. Very much so.
Very pertinent, I think. Ashley, what about you? Is there a character that we haven't mentioned yet that you want to call attention to?
Oh gosh. Well, you guys have hit on a lot of the highlights. I particularly enjoyed the servants' mutiny. I thought, you know what, they have earned the right to serve the king and queen. So I really enjoyed seeing them put that plan into action. I really enjoyed seeing Mary and Tom's story arcs, just thinking about how much those characters have grown since the first couple seasons. Mary started out not necessarily as a villain, I would say, but definitely, you know, she didn't always treat people the nicest, but just to see her, how much she's grown, and then to really become a leader and be respected for that has been so cool to see. And I loved that final scene between her and her grandmother, where her grandmother said, you know, Downton is in good hands because I'm entrusting it to you. So that was really special to see. And it was also neat to see how Tom has really just become a member of the families when their original relationship had been so strained, but it's just cool to see him get to be more part of the family and them understanding each other. So just lots of great little lovely character moments. I love Violet and Isabel's friendship. Always just fun to see them picking at each other but still supporting each other. And just so many nice little moments. This is a movie I definitely want to go back and see again, just so I can maybe appreciate some of those little things that I may have missed the first time.
Absolutely. Like, I mean, that's the problem. When the Dowager, like, you know, speaks, you know, that's kind of funny. And then you miss what, Crawley says, and then the vice versa. It's just it's just like, oh, I gotta be able to watch this a couple times, more times, so I can hear everybody's dialogue. Cause I'm sure it's just as witty, right?
But we just, I did love the scenes though, when Isabel actually surmised that, you know, that Lucy was Maud's daughter. That was awesome. And nobody, you know, that took me, it was like, oh, I knew that, you know, she had feelings for the kid and everything, but I didn't know that it was the daughter. And it was awesome that Isabel was the one who figured it out and everything.
Well, that's a great segue, because I was just about to ask, what do we think of the new blood that comes into the movie? So we've got Maud and Lucy as additions to the Grantham family. What, because they come out of nowhere. Like all of a sudden it's like, oh, you know, you got a cousin. Oh, okay. All right. So, okay. Let's, you know, this is the side of the family, but you know, it's English royals. I mean, what they've got, like tons of family that they never see and all that kind of thing. I mean, actually the initial premise of the first season is because it's, a long lost relative, right? Comes to bear on Downton Abbey. And so they have to deal with that. And so, yes, we've got more long lost relatives coming into play. What do we think?
I think it's awesome. And I love the budding romance that they started in this. And it was literally love at first sight for those two and everything. I thought the characters melded well together. The chemistry was very apparent on screen.
Very.
And that was just awesome. And it was nice to see him happy. You know, not like, you know, always like the wisecracking, you know, hey, you know, Ireland forever, you know, that type of stuff. So, but it was great to see Tom, you know, get his due. And I did love, you know, what they'd done with his character in this. And, you know, it was just so well done all the way around. And the new blood they had come in was good. It needed to be a little bit refreshed, because you also, if you remember, they tried bringing in a couple new characters in the last final couple seasons. Yeah. And everything. What was it, Lucy?
Mm-hmm.
And everything that they brought in, the cousin?
Not Lucy.
Rose.
Rose, yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And she wasn't even brought up at all in this thing.
And no, not even mentioned.
I don't even think she wasn't in the last season, was she?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, was she? Okay. I couldn't remember if she made it to the end or not.
She came close to the end.
She's a big movie star now. So
Can't
afford her. Yeah.
Exactly. Once she was in Baby Driver, that's it, dude. You know?
Exactly. Ashley?
Yeah, I thought they did a good job working in the new characters to the story. And I thought, you know, they did a good job explaining how, you know, why they needed some new people to come in. And I did like Tom and, oh gosh, I've forgotten her name again already.
Lucy,
thank you. But yeah, I really liked them. Tom has had several love interests off and on throughout the series, but none of them quite felt right. So I really liked this fit, that they could kind of understand each other, and maybe society had looked down on them in different ways. Him because of his background, and her because people saw her as a servant. So I really liked their interactions, and the scene of them dancing like out in the balcony at the end was just adorable. So like my heart just melted. So just some nice moments. And I enjoyed Lucy's mother. I thought was a really interesting character. And I love how Violet was understanding once she finally learned the truth. And it was great to see the king and queen, and some fun new characters. I thought they did a good job weaving them into the story.
Yeah. They might not be able to get the whole action assassination plot line right. But, you know, as far as the dramatic scenes, as far as the melodrama, as far as like the moments that touch you between, you know, the Dowager and Lady Mary, or, you know, the romance, like there's just no one that can do it better. I mean, it's just, and the setting with the costumes and the hair and the background, like the sets and everything, it's just perfect. I mean, it's really like a storybook come to life.
Very true.
That's exactly what it is.
What did you guys think of the scene between Violet and Mary at the end? Just curious. And it goes quiet.
Well, on a meta level, I think that may have been Maggie Smith's price to participate, because she'd been begging them to kill the Dowager for years because she wants to retire.
Of course.
Yeah, it kind of is a scene that has a double meaning, right?
Yeah.
Because it's a character saying goodbye, but it's also an actress saying goodbye, mm-hmm. right? And somebody that we have history on both fronts with, and it's hard not to be moved. She's just an amazing presence that, you know, it draws to life. Not only do you feel for the character and what Mary's feeling, but it's just like, oh yeah, but at some point we're not going to have Maggie Smith anymore.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Very, very emotional on both levels.
It was, because it was interesting, because we as a group had been talking that probably the final episode would have been her death or something.
Right.
You know,
I think a lot of people were feeling
that. A lot of people thought that.
Like the ending would be at a funeral. You know, like
exactly. And, you know, it's kind of like it could, would have been a good wrap up for the series. But then for her to survive, and I don't want to see her in any future movies. This is it. This, for any sequels, they should not have her character anymore, type thing.
I'm telling you, if the sequel is going to be her funeral and then them going to the depression, I might just have to pass on that.
Oh man, just like bring your box of tissues to the theater.
Exactly. That's going to be like, oh man, yeah, that's going to be hard to take.
If I remember correctly, Julian Fellowes has said he doesn't want to cover that.
Yeah.
He just has no interest in writing that. So, but
right.
But yeah, no, I do agree. That's the farewell scene. She should not be in any sequels if they go on.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So, now, getting back to your characters for a second, Andy, I wanted to ask you in particular, since you're the English historian of the group here.
Oh dear.
So Simon Jones, right, as King George.
Uh huh.
Like, okay, first of all, when did Simon Jones get so friggin' old that he
can't?
And what did you think of the depiction of the king and queen?
Pretty good. He was always a very private king, so I don't know a whole lot about George V. As far as like his personality, but he looked dead on, just spot on, and it meshed with what I do know about his personality. He was very formal. A big believer in sort of doing this, sort of putting on the show that the country expects. They sort of hit on that, and that, you know, I'm here to play a role, and so I need to play that role. And it felt like that. But I think they did a good job with the royals. Queen Mary, I really know nothing about her. Mm-hmm. So they could have been wildly wrong or perfectly right, and I just wouldn't know.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know much about them either. So, I mean, I guess it's a good thing that they could use these two, because, you know, yeah,
overshadowed by his grandmother.
It's like, well, he could have been shot. We wouldn't have known.
Exactly. Cause he was very quiet. I mean, his dad was sort of a larger than life character, Edward the Caresser. And then after them, you get, you know, the George the Sixth, the King's Speech, and then Elizabeth, and they're sort of lost in the shuffle, those two. So a bit of a blank slate for most people.
Yeah, I think Michelle mentioned, because she knows a lot more about the royals than I do, but she had mentioned how George makes a comment about one of his sons. Like, because he wants, what's his name, to accompany him. And that's, is that Edward, right?
Yeah, that's Edward, the one who...
Who doesn't last very long.
Does not last long.
As king.
Yeah, the one who's a big fan of Mr. Hitler. So,
oh yeah.
That could be the next movie. There we go.
That could be the next movie.
Oh God.
There we go.
Oh God, no. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, the way they make it sound is like, you know, like I think they said Downton could go on another 100 years, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
So I was joking to Judy, you know, when they were walking away from the house at the very end. This is where Daisy left the gas on in the house.
No! You see everything. No!
The other thing that kind of put me off a little bit was it was like all of a sudden they were like, we have a drone. Like, we could use a drone to show like all these wonderful exterior shots.
The cinematography was amazing in this movie.
Oh, gorgeous.
It was. But every time they shot like, is it Highclere Castle? Right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Every time they shot Highclere Castle, I couldn't help but think yes, it looks majestic. And yes, it's one of the most, you know, famous houses now on television. Right. But it just looks empty and cold. Like there was never like a lot of people around, or it just never seemed to be really active. It didn't feel very warm to me. I don't know. That was just me. Did anybody else get that impression as well? I guess not.
No, not as much. No.
It was actually, to me, it was more spawning and, you know, so huge and vast in this. It just looked gorgeous. And you could really see this more than that you saw it on the TV, since you had the huge screen. You saw like the surrounding areas when they were showing all the different angles of the house. You could see the lands around it and everything. And I kind of cheated and I watched the night before the documentary they did on NBC about the movie. And when they were talking about it, they have 15,000 acres.
Wow.
Still, there. Oh my God.
Yes. And it's just amazing how much land they have. You know, if you put that in, you know, my Peedley house is on a half acre, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's like times and times. That's probably the size of Cobb County or, you know, something like that. It's just amazing how much land these people had. And it's just awesome.
And nobody, I take it nobody here has actually visited it.
No.
I wish.
Yeah. All right. Bucket list.
You can stay there at Airbnb now, though.
Really?
Yes. We saw that while we were in the theater waiting for it to start. One of my friends saw on his phone that, yeah, you can rent it on Airbnb now.
Wow.
Yes. I haven't had the temerity to see how much that costs.
What's the price tag?
Exactly. Well, it would be worth it, though. You know, we'll just the Patreon money to send all of us to England.
Sounds good. We can even do a live podcast from Highclere Castle.
Oh, well, that would be awesome.
If you're expecting it to look at the interiors to look like the sets, then you'll be mistaken.
Completely.
That is true. That is true.
All the interiors are shot in London, so on sets. So, but man, that you know, that strikes me as amazing too, because that beautiful like living / drawing room that they always go to with the windows to the backyard or whatever just looks like just so comfortable. And it, you know, but yeah, I would stay there. And from what I understand, because of the show, it's actually in much better shape. I mean, it was falling apart before they, got a hold of it. The TV series did.
True.
So there were like 50 rooms or something like that. The ceilings were, falling apart and everything like that. So, this castle has been restored because of this show.
It's interesting because they've talked about it, you know, in that special, they were interviewing the guy who plays Tom, and they were saying that he's only been on the first two floors. There's two more floors above that he's never even seen.
Wow.
I could imagine it would take like a month at least to explore that house.
Oh, without a doubt. It's pretty amazing.
So getting back to the movie, I think we've covered most of the high points and maybe even a few of the low points. Anything that you'd like to bring up as we're getting out of here, Ashley?
I feel like... Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, you're fine.
Andy, Ashley, it all sounds good.
Just close enough.
It's the A, you know.
Yes. Yeah, just, you know what, as I was walking out of the theater, I just felt happy, and that's really all I wanted from this movie. I didn't expect that we'd ever get to go back to Downton, so it was just nice. Like someone had said earlier, it just feels like a big reunion. So it was just what I wanted to be, and who knows if this is the last we'll see of Downton, but if it is, it was nice to get to go there one more time.
Andy, what were you going to say?
See, I just loved the way they used the dance at the very end for the little snippets to wrap up each little storyline.
Yes.
With sort of like a few words in the middle of the waltz. It was just wonderfully done.
Absolutely. Mike?
I just thought if they ended it here, I would be happy. It's a good wrap up. It's a good farewell. The final... Everything about it is there's no murder mystery or who did Bates kill this time or what is Thomas going to do, you know, this time, you know, there's nothing like that. Or, you know, what kind of illness does Carson have? what is, you know, Daisy going to do, you know, mouth off against again? You know, it was a perfect ending. It was great. The two sibling daughters, they actually got along this movie. You didn't have any of the rivalries that you've had over the years and everything. And it was great. And I think they wrapped up all the little storylines that they started at the beginning, but they could continue if you want to. But I thought it was a good end point.
Yeah, I, you know, even though I wasn't looking for a second ending, this one was special and it felt like it was justified. I think anything else will be, it'll be a challenge. Not to say that, Fellows and Company aren't up for that challenge. But it also felt like if they wanted to, you know, this could be the start, like almost like a prequel to Downton Abbey, The Next Generation.
I was just about to say that, said it, yeah. 40 years later, you and I are still on the right time. And I was going to call it Downton Abbey, The Next Generation.
Well, heck, why stop there? Why not go to, you know, Downton Abbey 3000. Let's go in the far future and see what it's like. You know, we've seen Camelot 3000. Why not Downton Abbey 3000?
Yeah. Wow.
Tell me you wouldn't watch that.
I would. I totally would.
All right. Well, cool. We're going to give a quick rating and then get out of here on a scale of 1 to 5 stars. I was trying to think of something creative, but I think I'm just too tired. So, Ashley.
You know what? I'm going to give it 5 stars. There might be little places to be picky in the movie, but I just had a wonderful time. So 5 stars from me.
Andy?
I have to agree. 5 stars. I just walked out of the movie just happy. So that one of the best movies I've seen in a while.
Excellent. Excellent. Mike?
5 stars completely, and I'll even throw in some high tea. It'll be perfect.
I hate to be the downer of the group, but I'm going to give it a 4.5. I did think, like I said, the assassination plot wasn't really necessary, and a couple of the other things seemed a bit contrived. Also, the stuff between Daisy and her fiance didn't really work for me either, bringing in the hunky plumber or whatever. I was just like, you know, like these are things that obviously if they had a time to develop could have been really interesting subplots, but just crammed in there. It's just felt like at some point they were like, oh, we have to do something with some of these people, you know. But there was so much good about this. And we just talked about like the high points. There's so much else. And I can't wait to rewatch it again, which I will. So, well, very cool. Well, thanks, everyone. We're going to close up in a minute, but we'll be right back with the ESO Network Con.
Welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this geek girl is talking about the original Dark Crystal movie. So, in preparation for watching the new Dark Crystal series on Netflix, I rewatched The Dark Crystal. It had been years since I had watched the movie, and wanted to make sure that it was fresh in my mind before starting the new series, even though the new series is a prequel. This movie is a beautiful eye fest for puppets and fantasy lovers. It follows a young Gelfling named Jen, who was raised by a noble race called the Mystics. He has been told his whole life that he is the last survivor of the Gelflings, and that is his destiny to fix the Dark Crystal and bring life back to their world. On his journey, he meets another Gelfling named Kira, who also thought she was the last of her kind. The two travel to find the missing shard of the Dark Crystal and go fix it. But they have problems along their adventure since the crystal is guarded by the evil Skeksis, who only care about their own well-being and preserving their lives forever. This movie is beautiful. The puppets are amazing. The Skeksis are super creepy. And the story is really fun. The world is so lovely and well done in this film. And the background story was already laid in place for the new series since it's so rich in lore and just amazing. I am super excited to watch the prequel series now after rewatching this. Well, thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
For the week of September 25th, 2019, it's the ESO Network Con Report!
Con!
Well, before I get into where you're going to find some of us in the coming weeks, I do want to give a particular shout out and report of the Southern Surf Stomp Fest in Avondale Estates that I attended on September 21st, that Saturday. It was simply put, amazing. It was really fun. I love surf music, so we had 9 bands that were playing from noon till about 10:30 at night, all packed into this little area in Avondale Estates. It's right near. I mean, it's within walking distance of my parents' basement. As a matter of fact, they were having a bazaar outside festival thing there too. So it was kind of like almost like a joint effort. There were a lot of vendors set up. Some were people I knew, some people I did not know. So it was a great way to meet people and see old friends and just have a good time and sit back, sell some stuff. Peter and I did pretty well selling some stuff. And anybody who came by the table, whether you bought something or not, we really appreciate it. We appreciate your support. And it was a lot of fun. Like I said, the two bands I think that I was impressed by the most were two bands that I already knew going in. And one of them is the Mystery Men, who is a local band here in Atlanta, Mystery Men of Surf. They are just one of the best live bands around. They are just so tight and so talented. They're just great. And then a band that came up from Fort Lauderdale, the Intoxicators, they played as well, and they were amazing. I've seen them before a few years ago in Fort Lauderdale, and they were a lot of fun then, and they did not disappoint. So a lot of other bands, some I didn't know at all, and so I was exposed to for the first time, like Insect Surfer, I think it was called. But they've been around. This guy's been playing surf for 40 years. So he's from California. He's kind of started with he's very familiar with the surf movement when it first began. So, we had someone come over from England, that played, some guitar. So there was a lot of diversity there and a lot of fun stuff. A lot of people came out. It was very hot. It was very hot. It was a lot of fun. So, I hope to do it again next year. They do plan on having an event. This is the fifth Southern Surf Stomp Fest that they've had, and they don't show any signs of stopping. From what I understand from people who've been there multiple times, it's just getting bigger and bigger and better. So I can't thank Chad, who organized it, as well as there were some other volunteers and other folks who were very friendly, that's a great fun. So I hope to be back next year. And I hope that you guys check it out too. If you like surf music, even if you just want to come down for a little while and hang out, listen to some cool music and see some very, very talented artists and vendors, a lot of tiki stuff, a lot of aloha shirts, a lot of surf stuff, just a lot of hodgepodge of cool stuff that people were selling. Great stuff. So had a good time. Thanks again, everybody who came out, and hope to do it again next year. And that was last weekend. This weekend, Mike and I are both going to be at Monsterama. You've heard us talk about it several times, and one of the organizers, Anthony Taylor, joined us last week to tell us a lot of detail about it. And this is going to be a fun one. It is every year. It's a great show, a lot of great panels. A lot of great guests. So, and you get to hang out and just chill about monsters, and you get to do this it kind of helps you prepare and get in that Halloween spirit for classic monster stuff. So Mike and I will be there both days, Saturday and Sunday. So we hope to see you there. That is, of course, September 27th through the 30th. And that is in, is that technically Alpharetta, Mike?
It is Alpharetta.
Okay, so we will be in sunny Alpharetta. That's all for September. October 13th is the Atlanta Comic Convention. It's a one-day show that Mike and I like to go at and shop around. So if you're going to be at that show, please reach out to us, and we can try to arrange to meet up and say howdy. And that really is it for the next month or so. We've got some, like I said, some stuff coming up. that we're going to report on very, very soon and announce stuff that we're doing. And we're on the lookout of doing conventions. We're already getting our schedule set for 2020. So the first half of 2020 already looks like it's going to be crazy in terms of there's a lot of shows that we want to participate in. But we want to hear from you guys. And if you've got a show that we should check out, or that you want us to participate in, please reach out to us, because we love participating in, and we love talking about conventions.
And that's going to wrap up another episode of the Your Station One podcast. Let's thank our guests for being here. Andy, you made it through our first episode of Earth Station One. Congratulations, sir.
Thank you for having me. It's been a great time.
It was awesome. And I know you're already plotting Dragon Con already for next year. Any hints or anything that you want to let known we could expect?
There's a good chance there'll be a little bit of Doctor Who.
Really? I'm shocked.
Well, you know, if we're lucky, we'll get a series, too.
Well, I hope we get the new series by then. God help us with that other podcast. We do if we don't. The Trial of a Time Lord is getting closer and closer as we speak. Okay, but thank you, sir. Don't worry about getting up or anything. The duct tape is at least, you know, 4 or 5 years to come off, so it's okay. So you're stuck with us. And Ashley, thank you so much, my love.
Oh, thank you. It is always a pleasure to talk movies with you guys.
Anything you want to shout out about or anything?
Yeah, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to my local comic book shop, Rockwood Comics. I achieved a geek milestone a couple weeks ago, and I bought my first comic book.
Whoa!
Oh, what is it? What is it? What did you get?
This is going to come as a real shocker to everybody, but it was a Star Wars comic.
No way!
I know. That's kind of uncharacteristic for me, but...
because they don't make a Downton Abbey comic.
I wish they would. I would buy that if I did. But I'd read like a compilation of comics from the library in the past and read some graphic novels, but I hadn't ever gone to this comic book store to buy a comic. So they have some new ones that are going to be tying into episode 9. And so I went, and it was a great experience. They were so helpful. I bought 2 comics and I liked them so much, I went back and bought 5 more. So,
whoa.
One of us.
Unfortunately, I've started a new hobby, so my budget isn't happy, but I'm glad to finally kind of get into this area that I haven't delved into much as a geek. So,
Ashley, there's a great one I want you to pick up. It's a trade paperback. You probably can get it from the library. It's called Tag and Bink. It's a Star Wars. It's a Star Wars tale, but it's basically guys who were in from... all the way from episode 1 all the way through the end of Return of the Jedi.
Oh, that sounds pretty cool.
But they're seeing it from an outsider's point of view.
They're in the background.
Yeah, they're the background guys. Oh, yeah. And you see it and they go, that's how they got there. Oh, that makes sense.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Oh, yeah, exactly. You're going to love it. So check it out. I definitely would recommend it. Mr. Mike, thank you very much, my friend.
And as always, it's my pleasure.
Anything you want to shout out about, sir?
Yeah, I got to give a shout out to one of our fellow podcasts, Raging Bullets, a DC Comics fan podcast, is now back on the air.
They had
quite a few months where they had a little bit of setback. Good buddy Jim Zegulin had some health issues that needed to get resolved, but he is recovering and he is strong, and they are recording again. And it's good to hear both those guys, because I didn't realize exactly how much I'd miss them until they were gone. So yes, they are making up for lost time by recording like 4-hour episodes. So Raging Bullets is back, baby.
That is awesome. Sean has been on our podcast quite a few times.
Yeah.
And
unfortunately, we can't get Jim to brave up to the geek seat, but one of these days.
Yeah, someday we'll just grab him, you know, sneak up to Ohio or something.
When he's fully recovered, we have to wait until, you know, he's fully recovered from what ails him right now. But still, you know, one of these days, Jim.
Wow, you're being nice, Mike. You know, we didn't give, you know, Andy that kind of choice. He could have had the flu or something, you know. I got to give a big shout out, actually, before we get out of here, to our friends over at our favorite comic shop over in Tucker, Georgia. You know which one I'm talking about, right, Mikey?
I do.
Yes, our friends over in Tucker, they got, you ready for this? They got Infinite Realities, got the best comic shop in Atlanta, 2019, voted by the folks of Creative Loafing. So, woohoo, for a brand new comic shop. That is just amazing. And Jamie and crew, if you ever get in Tucker, you know, please stop by. It's a great, great shop. And the customer service is awesome. The selection is growing, and it's just a great shop for gaming, for comics, for graphic novels. It is awesome. It is really awesome.
And I dare say in a couple months, we will be giving you a big reason to stop on by that store.
Oh, yes. I can almost say it could be something monumental coming your way. It's pretty awesome, actually. So it's cool. And, you know, we got a lot to be thankful for, all our friends, all our listeners. Thank you, everyone, of course, for listening. But before we get out, we will be back again next week. That's right, folks. We're going to be talking about something not so serious. Maybe you could
say very British.
Very British, or you could say something completely different. So we are looking at the 50th anniversary of Monty Python's Flying Circus. It should be a lot of fun. So until then, my name is Mike Faber. We will see you here next time on your Station 1 podcast. Peace out. And we're done. Boom. So that's it. We made it, folks.
Yeah.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.